What's in store for your business this week at Staples?
Doing business like a CEO while saving like a CFO.
Staples has all the supplies you need to run your business like a boss at prices that'll make your bookkeeper smile.
Now that is an achievement.
Everything from markers and pens to 2019 desk calendars.
And right now, a 12-pack of Sharpie markers and an 8-pack of Expo dry erase markers are only $4.99 each.
At Staples, where there's a whole lot in store. Ends 1/19/19 in store only.
The Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio is on the air.
Hello, this is Leaf calling. How are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, I'm very good. I wrote you a message, but I don't know if you got it.
Yeah, I did, and I responded, but I don't know if you got my message or not.
I didn't get it, so I just wrote you. But anyway, it doesn't matter. I've
read the world
anyway.
Yeah. Either way, we're here.
Yeah, yeah. Good to hear from you.
You too, and apologize to Alex on my behalf for bothering him a couple times.
Oh, really? I had no idea. Really? Okay. I had no idea.
So how is the weather out there in Germany today?
Well, today's been pretty nice, actually. Like 12 degrees Celsius. It's kind of spring-like. We didn't have winter here this December and January, which is really, really strange. We should have had winter. And Christmas Eve was like 15 degrees Celsius, and that was very weird, you know, walking outside in jeans and T-shirt. That just doesn't make sense. So we were actually very happy to be able to visit some states on our U.S. tour, North American tour, where we had some winter. Because, you know, me being a Norwegian,
right.
Winter is important.
I was going to say, we got all your snow.
Exactly. That's what the Germans saying. And even the Norwegians, like, okay, the snow is in the U.S. It's just on the other side of the planet. Yeah, but this North American tour contained everything from hot summer temperatures in Mexico and San Juan, Puerto Rico, and, you know, California is still pretty hot. And then it was Montreal. We were just snowed down in Montreal and Portland. We even had to cancel Portland because of a snowstorm. So I'm happy I put, when I packed, actually, the three of us, my husband and my son and myself, we had to share one suitcase because we have to check in instruments, you know, and musical equipment. So there is not much space for suitcases. So I was like, okay, moon boots and bikini. So, yeah. what's there to, you know, pack in between? That's like jeans and T-shirts. Yeah.
And I see the infamous bikini shot. You posted it on Facebook or something.
Oh, we did. Okay, but that was, I guess, it could have been 70,000 tons of metal. Could have been. Or it was Thailand in October, November last year.
Right.
Could have. So, yeah, we've been through every season on our North American tour. So it was very exciting.
Well, it's good to have you back on again after so long, because I had you on when you put out your last album and been trying to get you back ever since. I had talked to Alex when he had The Last Atrocity come out, and now we've come full circle. All right. So assuming that the Riesling is good this season over by you, because I know you're out in wine country.
Yeah.
Whenever you're ready, we can get rolling here.
I'm ready.
Yeah. Listen to Third Eye Cinema, your source for in-depth discussion of cult cinema and music. Tonight, Gothic and Pagan Metal Chanteuse, Leif Christine, on the Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio. Good evening and welcome to Third Eye Cinema, your source for music and film that matter. Cult, underground, independent, and generally falling outside the mainstream corporate boardroom paint-by-numbers bullshit. Tonight, a return engagement with Gothic Viking Chanteuse, Liv Christine. As a founding member of the band who now single-handedly birthed the gothic metal genre, Theater of Tragedy, and with four further albums under her belt as a solo act, Liv has progressed to the pinnacle of fame, fronting the classiest and most beloved of pagan symphonic acts, the mighty Liv's Eyes, alongside husband, producer, and mastermind Alex Krall from Atrocity and Master Sound Studios. With their latest Symphonies of the Night representing a strong return to form, harkening back to the days of Lovelorn, Vinland Saga, and particularly the excellent Legendland, please join us as we speak to one of the true leading lights in gothic and pagan metal, the lovely and talented Liv Christine, only here on Third Eye Cinema. But first, just to give you an idea of what we're talking about, here's Liv, Alex, and Thorsten to tell you about The Fading Earth. Polish and the Third Eye Cinema with our special guest tonight, Lee Christine of Lee's Eyes. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Enjoy the day.
Hey guys, this is Alex Byrod of Stun and Force, Voodoo Circle, Cinema, Primal Fear, and Rock Meets Classic, and you guys are listening to Third Eye Cinema. Wow.
You may have to cram most of them in there.
All right.
Hi, here's Matt Sinner of Primal Fear and Cinema, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hi, this is Golf Minister. You're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
You put some echo on that.
Hi, this is DC Cooper from Royal Hunt, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hi, this is Alessandropoli from Rhapsody of Fire, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Enjoy.
This is Lambal from Edenbridge, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Tonight, we're talking metal, and we have with us a woman who, in her 20-year-plus career, has been both pioneer and leading light in the gothic, symphonic, and Viking pagan metal genres. With the late lamented Theater of Tragedy, she fronted one of the, if not the first, and most popular bands in gothic metal. In her solo career, she's touched on everything from moody electronic industrial to sunny radio-friendly pop. And as what is traditionally referred to as the better half of the husband and wife team behind the Mighty Leaves Us, she's the undisputed leader of the symphonic pagan metal genre. Here tonight to discuss that very band, ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming once again the lovely and talented Lee Christine of Leaves Us. Lee, welcome back to Third Eye Cinema.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure and honor talking to you.
The last time we had you on, we went into your history with Theater of Tragedy, meeting Alex and your solo career. I later had Alex on as well, where we went into a bit about Master Sound Studios and your production work, as well as the history of Atrocity. But the one thing we didn't really tap into between those two interviews was your work together, which, of course, is the mighty Viking pagan symphonic metal act, Leaves Eyes. So tell us about how you guys came up with the idea of Leaves Eyes.
Well, actually, it was actually the fault of Theater of Tragedy, my former band, because they decided to leave me out of the band, to kick me out in 2003. And this had happened. I had no idea that this was going to happen. And I talked to Alex after the shock, and he said, like, okay, if you need good musicians, we're here. Atrocity, basically, we're here. And they're also my best friends, and I just needed a couple of days to think about my future if I wanted to deal with a music business after all that had happened. But knowing that I have such good friends supporting me, I actually sat down and wrote a concept, and that was the concept of the first Leaves Eyes album called Lovelorn. That's a fictional story I invented myself about a sea maid and her love towards a human being, and living by the fjords, exactly the place where I grew up, Stavanger, Norway. So, you know, my childhood and my, you know, the fact that I grew up in Norway and lived there for 20 years, this is also a very, very basic thing in Leaves Eyes, in the concept of Leaves Eyes, and also music of Leaves Eyes, because you do hear folk instruments and traditional instruments in Leaves Eyes. So the guys of Atrocity, of course, including Alex, my husband, they were very eager about, you know, working more and recording a whole album and, you know, going on tour And yeah, they've been such a great help. And so Leaf Size is it's not at all a project of mine. It's my band, and it's been my band since the very first days since we formed. So yeah, sometimes bad things lead to good things. So I'm very, very happy to still be around and to be able to spread my wings and use my heritage and my linguistic knowledge, my interests, everything, my musical knowledge. I put all of this into my music and into my concepts and lyrics, and it just feels great.
And it's unique, too, not only in the fact that the two of you are married, which can cause issues in and of itself, just look at ABBA or Fleetwood Mac, but that you come from you come from very different places, in death metal with some gothic influences on Alex's end, and then gothic metal with some industrial influences on your end, and then come together and form a band that's really none of the above, but a different mix of genres entirely. So first you put out Lovelorn, which is one of my favorite Leaf Size albums to this day. It's very gothic metal with more than a nod towards your past career in sound with Theater of Tragedy, but also clearly pointing towards something entirely new. I think this is one of those albums where you really can't find a weak point. I mean, there's a very siren-like feel to tracks like Norwegian Love Song, Tale of the Sea Maid, The Dream, and Into Your Light. Mm-hmm. And while there's plenty of beefy guitars and metal authority to the overall sound, it's also very much like a mutual love letter between you and Alex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. We were open-minded towards everything, and basically the guys were leaning on my shoulders and supporting me, and you know, when I had an idea, a lyrical idea, they would sit down and try to find the right instruments and tunes and melodies for it. So it was evolved and developed with our creativity. We just went by the flow, by the creative flow. And I think Lovelorn is a very refreshing album. It's kind of unique, I think. And
yes.
I was so happy the day it was released, because it was a manifest for me that, okay, I'm still here, and my friends didn't let me down. So, okay, I wanted to show the world that there is so much creativity inside me, and also I have just first-class musicians and people around me. So this is where it came from. Lovelorn is just a product of love towards music and creativity and first-class musicians.
Yeah, I mean, even in your catalog, like you said, it's very unique. It doesn't mix in well with the other albums, even though it's pointing towards where you would start going. There's a lot of open and honest emotion, if not youthful passion, in the lyrics. It's not the sort of album that could have come out of anyone but a pair of newlyweds.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better myself. Yeah, you're definitely right, yeah.
And then you made a sort of right turn into pagan Viking territory with Vinland Saga, which that in itself is an interesting album. That half the album is very manly and what you'd expect from a pagan metal record dealing with Viking culture. There are just as many parts on that album that were quite mellow and folky, and I found that rather surprising and even a bit odd by comparison with what came before and what would immediately follow.
I had a couple of demos with me when I visited Norway. That must have been the end of 2004, winter 2004. I went home to Norway to see my family, to visit my family for Christmas, and I had a couple of songs with me, just like, you know, rough demo tracks. And I actually had some time to just sit down and inhale the Norwegian nature, visit libraries and look through books, look through my own books in the basement, in the cellar of my father's and mother's house, of my parents' house, you know, just take my time with material and things and landscapes already being there. It was all there. It was just a matter of time for me to go there and discover everything. And that's something you actually do, I think, when you leave your home country for a while and then you return and then you find it's all there. So I was bathing in this huge source of inspiration, and I returned with the whole concept. So yeah, we went straight back to the studio and recorded the Vinland Saga. It was not a very long recording session, I have to tell you. It was very, very creative. Yeah. So Vinland Saga just sprung out of the fact that I just went back home and found that source and went with the creative flow.
Right. And there are some songs on there that have become conscious staples, of course, with Farewell Proud Men, Solemn Sea, and Newfoundland, holding down the Yang end of the equation, and Elegy, the clear standout single, as it turned out to in fact be. from there, Lisa has put out an EP, unlike any of the others you put out, like Elegy, My Destiny, or Melusine, in that most or all the songs were unique to it, which is Legendland. And as I mentioned to both of you in the past, this is actually where my wife and I discovered you when you were touring with the Roy Khan Camelot and decidedly blew them off the stage, which I was not expecting. So,
wow.
But this is some really strong material. And if I'm not mistaken, none of it reappeared on prior or subsequent albums. So what was going on there? Why the big change? And also, why was it an EP as opposed to an album?
Yeah, that's a very good question. It could have been a whole album as well. Had enough material for a whole album, but actually we had a great tour coming up. That was a US tour and European tour, and we wanted to promote the whole tour with a brand product. So this EP just sold a lot of copies, and actually we have quite a number of fans requesting us to play, you know, all the EP extra tracks and bonus tracks, because some people told me that there are some really good, you know, some real pearls, you know, being bonus tracks. So I don't think there is any bonus track, just the term itself, but I'd love to do such a show, because bonus tracks are hardly ever played live.
Yeah. But, I mean, that EP was really intense. And actually, funny, because usually people that put out EPs, it's almost like a cast-off or a quickie. Like, okay, well, I got one song. Let's throw a couple of bonus tracks on, whatever. Whereas this really, I think for years, I was like, well, if you want to know who Leaves Eyes is, listen to this. So that was kind of like your signature sound right there. And yet it was an EP, so.
You're so right. Yeah, you're so right. And this is actually, when I compare our latest album, Symphonies of the Night, this is where a number of fans and friends and journalists also pointed out that this is, that Symphonies of the Night is somehow connected to this era.
Yes.
Of Leaves Eyes. I think that that's very right. Yeah, I feel very comfortable with where I'm standing with Leaves Eyes right now.
Yeah,
after 10.5 years of experience, yeah.
And I'm going to circle around to that very point. But, you know, you got some powerful tracks on it, like Skraelings, Viking's Word, The Crossing. I mean, it actually, like I was saying, it deserves a special status as being like a missing album and one of your most significant at that. So from here, you gave us Njord, which skewed the sound a bit again from what immediately came before with Legendland. The album bore more than a little similarity to Vinland Saga, but there was something quite different about the sound as well, possibly relating to the use of a sort of Celtic women modality with the Ulaian pipes and the tin whistle. What played into this album?
Well, from Njord, as you already mentioned, we let in a more Celtic influence, and most of the stories actually behind the lyrics for these tracks are actually based on Celtic heritage, the history of Vikings as the Anglo and the Saxon Viking people went to what is today the United Kingdom. So, how do you say, kind of bumping into to Celtic history and culture. So this is basically what Njord is about. So you do have a lot of Celtic influence there, which is probably the reason why Njord is different from all the other albums.
Right. And even so, you have My Destiny, which is one of your strongest tracks since Elegy. So it wasn't like a total right curve, but there was something very different about it. And I guess that's what it was, because it felt like an Irish album.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was the first time for me to sing in real Irish language as well. Very interesting.
Another interesting choice was your cover of Simon Garfunkel's arrangement of a traditional English folk tune, Scarborough Fair. I mean, this was always a favorite of mine. It's quite eerie and mournful. So what led you to put that one on? You still there, Leif? Wow, bad connection.
Bad connection.
Yeah.
I'm here. I've decided to just stay at the window because I imagine connection is better when I'm staying here. So I walked towards the kitchen when I was talking to you, and then suddenly you were gone.
Just dropped off, yeah.
I stay here. Yeah, just dropped off. We were talking about Simon and Garfunkel, right?
Right. We were talking about the Simon and Garfunkel song. So what was your inspiration for putting that on yours?
Yeah, that was actually during my teen ages. I was an exchange student in Wales, somewhere between Cardiff and Swansea. And the family I stayed with were just obsessed about Simon and Garfunkel. And I kind of got hooked up on Simon and Garfunkel, too. So this is a song which reminds me about my youth and my, you know, my times being an exchange student. But the real challenge was trying to turn this song into a metal song.
Right.
So we kind of, it wasn't that easy to convince my band members about the fact that this song can actually be a metal-inspired song. But this song brings back good memories for me personally.
And you put out another interesting EP in At Heaven's End, which, beyond a gorgeous cover, featured acoustic versions of Scarborough Fair and Irish Rain, as well as three unique tracks. So were these tracks left off Muir deliberately? I didn't see why they weren't put on the album.
Actually, these tracks came into existence just shortly before the master. So that was at the end of the mix. So it was too late, but it's not because they're different or not as good as the tracks on the album.
Exactly.
It was just because we were in the creative flow and we had more material than requested and the album was finished. So, right, what do we do with these songs?
Right.
So, yeah, that's how it happened, yeah.
So then you put out Meredith, which represents a bit of an oddity in your catalog in that you brought in a second vocalist, Annette Gulbranson, which I thought was a bit unnecessary and seemed to throw the dynamic off a bit. So what was this all about? Why did you bring in a second vocalist?
Well, actually, Annette Gulbranson is a very good friend of mine, and she studied folk and folklore singing in Norway. And she happened to be around during the recordings, and I said, come on, just join me. Would be nice to have an alto, a deeper voice on these songs, because traditional Norwegian folk singing is normally in more voices. So, yeah, I was happy to have Annette, my friend, on the album. And there is also Maite Itois. She's the wife of John Kelly, of former Kelly family, and a very good friend of my family and Alex's family. And Maite, John's wife, is just, she's an excellent singer, and she's a studied music and singing and history of music half of her life. So she brought about, you know, a very unique voice, absolutely amazing. And I even had the luck to perform with Maite and John at the Metal Female Voices Festival in Belgium a couple of years ago, which was absolutely amazing, yeah.
But it seemed like kind of almost like a group effort, like it's like a chorus. You've got a couple of voices in there. And I was like, what is going on? This does not sound like what we've come to expect from Lisa. So was there any real reason for this? Or was it just because, you know, these people were there and you knew them?
It was basically because these people were there and also inspired us, the whole band. So for, well, especially in my case, but for the instrumental players, I guess they got their influence from other sources. I'm not sure really from where. Alex and Tosso are very interested in music and music theory and all this and music history. So, well, they keep picking up things, interesting things here and there, and discovering new movements within the underground of metal and folk music. Or so there is always something new coming into the band, I guess. Well, Alex Thorsten and me were kind of hyperactive artists. There is always something going on. And there is always somebody in the studio, so we actually have two recording rooms so that we don't get on each other's nerves, you know.
Yeah, I mean, and you can tell the folk influence because the album almost leaned towards being mellow. I mean, retaining the pipes and whistles of Muir while you added things like mandolin, fiddle, and harp to the equation. It was tapping into like the softer, almost acoustic and the pagan metal along the lines of early Wintersor.
Mm-hmm.
Now we come to Symphonies of the Night, which represents quite a change from the direction that Muir and Meredith would be pointing towards. Because I thought you were almost becoming like an adult contemporary act. It kept like getting more mellow as you went on. But this time around, you've gone back to being more or less a sole vocalist, albeit retaining your sister Carmen Lee's from Midnight Soul on backing vocals. There's a welcome change to the sound once again in that you've gone back, like you had kind of hinted at earlier, to a very full and dynamic sound driven by your earlier, more aggressive style of Legendland, while perhaps skewing a bit towards a more, my wife thought it sounded very radio-friendly, like a commercial sort of a sound as well, playing into that. So what was what were you thinking of when you went into this album? Was there a plan?
No, not at all. Actually, we just went with the creative flow. I told my band members we have 10 years of experience and history within these sides, and some of us even have more than 20, 25 years of experience. So just do what we feel like doing and let in any influence you want to let into the music. So that's where we started from. And you're so right. Symphonies of the Night kind of goes back to the Vinland Saga area, but this was never planned. It just happened this way. So, and this is good because we still have so much material on our hard disk. There is so much to take from where it came from. So, yeah, we're very excited to start writing the next album, actually.
Nice.
Symphonies of the Night kind of Tom Jones said it in a very nice way. He said, Symphonies of the Night kind of sums up all the good things and the best things about Leaves' Eyes. So he will go 10 years at Leaves' Eyes and hope for another 10 years at least. I promise you, I will still be around.
And it's funny because that was exactly what I was about to say. There's a definite tapping into the history of all your respective bands here with a fairly direct mm-hmm. gothic metal approach to Fading Earth, a death metal speed and yeah. aggression to Hymn to the Lone Sands, Symphony of the Night and Hell yeah. to the Heavens sound very traditionally Leaves Eyes, as if they came off somewhere between Legendland, Villain Saga, and Njord, and several tracks that mm-hmm. mix the mellower approach of the Meredith era with the more imposing bombastic feel we've come to expect from earlier Leaves Eyes. So you've covered all the bases, in effect.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. It feels very comfortable, as already mentioned, standing here with my band. That where we are right now is just where we want to be. And that's why we needed to go on tour, play these songs live, play this album live. And we've had amazing feedback from both press and audiences, fans and friends all over the world. We've been on tour basically nonstop since October. It started with China, going through parts of Asia and then back to Europe, including the UK, and then Puerto Rico, Mexico, and USA and Canada. So Russia, we did Russia too. So yeah, we've been pretty much everywhere with this album, and it's so good to see that people appreciate it. It's always a matter of give and take. When we get this positive feedback, you know, that's when I know why I'm doing this, yeah.
So you mentioned that you were toured Russia. Did you run into those infamous Olympic hotels and toilets?
Well, we were there before Sochi, before the Olympic Games. So,
right.
Yeah, that's that was when they were building things. So, yeah, one of the venues we played was actually under construction. So, yeah, no toilets and strange tunnels here and there. And it was like, hello, Cleveland, yeah.
And what's interesting about the album is something that I had hinted at, which is that you've taken what would seem to be mellow tracks, and just from the titles, and brought in a lot of distorted guitars, big symphonic choir-like choruses, and melodrama. It never really falls into the choir parts of albums like Vinland Saga, New York, or Merdead. It's very much bombastic and in your face. Just looking at tracks like, you know, Gaswintha, Angel and the Ghost, or and Ophelia, you'd think those would be like light, airy folk ballads from the title, like Maid of Lorraine, Eleanor de Provence, but they turn out to be something very different. In fact, the only actual balladeering on the album would be the very symphonic Requiem, St. Cecilia, and Nightshade, and neither one of those is actually sweet in major key. They're very dark and mournful. Did you have anything playing into this? Were you just feeling particularly dark or angry or...
I don't think none of us were really angry. It's more the fact that Leaves' Eyes, you know, came into existence 10 years ago and that we just felt like just letting any influence to our music, any whatsoever influence, and just see, go with the creative flow and see where we end. So it's a strong expression. Yeah, this album is very expressive, but it has less to do with darker moods. It has more to do with... okay, we found ourselves, and it feels good to be here. So the songs you already mentioned, we played like 6 or 7 songs of the album live already, and the people kind of feel the connection between the band and the new album, that this is what Leaves Eyes is about. I mean, of course, all the other releases we had, of course, this is also what we are about. But you need a lot of, challenge, experience, especially live experience and studio experience, to come up with an album like this. This is not done, you know.
It's not a first album.
Not something... Exactly. It's not. And I think that's what people can hear and do hear on this album.
And another thing I noticed is that your voice, if anything, has gotten more full with the years. I mean, you can still hit the coloratura highs, but you appear to have developed a real chest voice that plays into a more mezzo-soprano range, as in Native Lorraine, but it's all over the album. You've expanded your range with time.
Yeah, the thing is, I actually never plan anything when it comes to my voice or melodies or ranges or anything. The ranges of my voice have always been there, but maybe the expression is different. And it's always the music itself which inspires me to sing it in the manner I'm singing. So music is the inspiration for me to start working on a certain manner. And Mighty Toys, I already mentioned her, the one, John Kelly, she's got so much experience, and she's actually the first person I call to come by and visit me in the studio to give me some dirty tricks. So, because I actually, to tell you the truth, I never had any singing lessons and I never studied music. So this is something I've been doing all my life. It's all there. And I have two very strong vocal cords. But sometimes you just need somebody to come and listen to you and say, hey, just try this setting and try to imagine this, and then, or try to gather power from there and not there. And wow. And that's just exactly what I need, just little hints and ideas. That's all. That's actually all. So
yeah, because I mean,
when I heard the demo,
your early material is playing more into like a bel canto sort of thing, where you're doing like a Sumi Joe, and now you're going more into like a Renata Tabalda territory. It's very chest voice. It's very throaty. So it's nice to see this development.
It's nice to be part of this development. But my parents told me when they heard this album, they said, well, that's what you did when you were 5 years old and we were closing the doors. Okay. So it's been there all the time. It was just a matter of time, you know, gaining the right influence or trigger for, you know, to use this manner of singing. It's there. Yeah.
So do you think that Alex have influenced the sound on Symphonies of the Night more than prior albums? Because there's a heavy, like, Western European historical focus lyrically, and there's strong hints of the musical approach he was pushing Atrocity towards with The Cult.
Well, The Cult, as you already mentioned, was mixed, mastered, and released just before Symphonies of the Night.
Right.
So Alex, you know, through A Cult, of course, he worked a lot on the very heavy sound, and he's a perfectionist and a workaholic, to tell you the truth. He's the guy, you know, you meet when I'm walking to the studio. It's just a couple of meters from the house, and I'm, you know, going to the studio with a cup of coffee in my hand, ready to attack. And who do I meet? You know, that's my husband, and he's going to bed. So yeah, this is, there is always, as already mentioned, there is always somebody in the studio, but Alex is the master of sound, and he's evolving a lot, and he has his connections here and there who provide him with the right, how do you say, gear or tools to develop. So yeah, Alex he's always moving on. And that's something you can definitely hear on Symphonies of the Night.
And in any case, like I said, it's a true return to form, and I personally think it's your best since Legendland. It was actually hard for me to narrow it down to two representative tracks to air with the interview, but as you know, me and my wife are both huge Lee's West fans, so I did what I could.
Wow, thank you so much. Thank you.
Speaking of which, you just finished, as you had mentioned, the North American tour, and sadly we did miss out on your New York stop this time around to both her and my eternal regret. But I understand that you also took part in the infamous 10,000 Tons of Metal cruise, so tell us a bit about that.
Mm-hmm. That was amazing, because actually as we were sitting on the tube to get to the airport to fly to Miami, Atrocity got the message, hey, do you guys want to play 70,000 Tons of Metal? That was on the day we left. So, and of course, all the guys were there, you know, in my suitcase, in the Lisa suitcase. So, of course, that was no problem. So we went on cruise, you know, originally we did, you know, one band, and then we were two bands all of a sudden. But that was, it was amazing. Everything went very well organized, and I have to say, there was another mom as well there bringing her kid on the ship, but there were two kids, and I have to say it was very, very nice audience, peaceful audience, humble, friendly audience, and a wonderful atmosphere. So, and that was the first time in my life that somebody handed a pina colada to me when I was on stage. And that was nice. It was, you know, at the pool, full crowd, amazing, a pina colada. The only thing was that it was a little bit hot under my corset and wearing high heel shoes. So I was very grateful for that pina colada. It actually saved me.
Well, you know, I'm surprised you guys volunteer with it, given all the news about cruise ships lately. All these things in the
yeah,
news.
Yeah, absolutely.
So now you're back home. Are there any further tour plans on the horizon, or are you finally just going to get back to cutting the next album?
Well, we just returned. Actually, we arrived a little bit later than planned because of canceled flights. There was, I think, bad weather in New York. So we lost a gear in Toronto, and we came home one day later. So, you know, I'm kind of tuning into to European rhythm, day and night rhythm. I'm kind of still a little bit in a jet lag, like, and my family as well. But the gear has arrived. My laundry has arrived. It was one big case of laundry. It has arrived. So we're getting there, and we were actually able to play Kiev these days, but we canceled because of the legal critical situation right now. And the Norwegian embassy actually said that, okay, if you go there, it's your problem. We won't come and pick you up if something happens. So it's your own risk. So, yeah. So we decided to stay here and do Ukraine One Piece is back in the country. So now we will do a couple of European shows and festivals.
Are you there? Hello.
Hello. I think we lost each other.
Yeah. Wow, you cut out again.
Ah, dear. Well, sorry, where did we lose each other? Yeah, we'll be back in Ukraine when peace is settled, right? And we'll be back in North America next year, the whole of America, actually. And I'm just still very impressed by them, by the warm welcoming from the U.S. audience, the Canadian audience. Absolutely amazing. And thanks for coming to the meet and greets and, you know, meeting me at the merchandise after the show. I met hundreds and hundreds of people, I think even maybe thousands. I'm so grateful. Thank you so much for having us.
So do you have anything you'd like to plug, or did you want to point listeners to your website or your Facebook page?
Well, there is always something going on our Facebook page and then web page. So we're still planning shows for the after festival season. So yeah, we'll do a couple of shows in Europe now, and yeah, festivals and single shows. And but for already mentioned, after all the festivals, we'll see what's going to happen. Nothing's really planned so far. So, oh yeah. Probably I'm going on a solo tour. That's for Europe.
Oh, nice.
But I hope to bring the package to the North America. I have so many people asking for Theater of Tragedy and my solo album. So, yeah, why not? That's something we should think about for the future. I'd love to do this.
That would be nice. Well, with that, Liev, I'd like to thank you again for joining us here on Third Eye Cinema. And we'd love to have you back to talk your next album, either solo or with Liev's Eyes, whichever comes first.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I'm very happy to talk to you again. And I wish you a wonderful day. I'm going to bed. It's about midnight here. So I'm going to bed. And, yeah, have a great day.
Have a good night. Good night's sleep.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
So
take care. Bye.
And to close out our interview with Liev, here's another one off Symphonies of the Night, where they talk Jeanne d'Arc, the Maid of Lorraine.
Thank you.
Time on Third Eye Cinema with Dave Kahn of one-of-a-kind Canadian pagan metal band Scythian. If you'd like to contact us here, comments, suggestions, or you're a filmmaker or musician who'd like to join us on air, email us at thirdeyecinema@hotmail.com, visit our website, thirdeyecinema.wordpress.com, or our Facebook page, facebook.com/thirdeyecinema. Third Eye Cinema brought to you by the Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio. you missed any part of this or any other Third Eye Cinema broadcast, just visit our website or Facebook page for links to the shows in question. All Blog Talk Radio shows are available for archive listener download at your convenience. And next time...
Okay, hello, this is Trollman from Trollfest, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Keep it real, people.
And coming soon...
Okay. Hi, everybody. This is Chris Pachanko. Hi, everybody. This is Chris Pachanko from Vanishing Point, all the way in Australia. You listen to Third Eye Cinema. Check it out. Crank it up.
This is Dave Gaughan from the Canadian folk power metal band Scythia, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Name of the show is Third Eye Media, right?
Or Third Eye Cinema.
Cinema. Okay, it says media here on my schedule. Okay, so Third Eye Cinema. So, hey, everybody, this is Pete Zug of Iron Savior, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Have fun and enjoy the ride.
Nice. And that actually brings a correction to mind. Next week will actually be You'll Be Hunted by Trolls. The Troll Man himself joins us from Trollfest. So next week will actually be...
Okay, hello, this is Trollman from Trollfest, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Keep it real, people.